Cross friends, welcome once again to Box the Beat on NLL Radio, also available on iTunes via Inside Lacrosse Podcasts. I am Stephen Stamp, your host and an editor at ilindoor.com. Very pleased to be back with you this week for the end of the National Lacrosse League regular season. I am just back from Prague, where I was at the Alice Hrabeski Memorial Tournament. Fantastic experience. If you can go, you should go. It is incredible. If you love lacrosse and you love camaraderie, you're just going to have an amazing time. Just trust me. Trust everyone who's been there. Go to this event in Prague at the end of April. Now, though, we are focusing on the National Lacrosse League, and this week it is the Record Breakers episode of Box La Beat. Four National Lacrosse League single season records were broken up to the last one happening Saturday night on the last weekend and the second last day of the regular season. I speak with the four men who broke those records, Zach Currier, Mark Matthews, Jake Withers, and Joe Resiteritz, this week on Box La Beat. Joining me on Box La Beat from the Calgary Roughnecks, the new rookie cause turnover king, Zach Currier. Welcome to the show again.
Thanks for having me, Pete.
It's good talking to you, and congratulations. We're talking to guys who have set National Lacrosse League records this year, and for you, there's a couple of things. The one is the rookie cause turnover record, which originally didn't go up on the scoreboard for you. Is the one that broke the record was actually last week, or the week before, the second last week of the season. You picked off a pass somebody was passing across the top of the formation on offense. You picked it off and went, and it didn't originally pop up, but the NLL corrected it and added it in afterwards. So it was kind of after the fact, but I'm sure you weren't paying that careful attention.
I actually didn't know until my dad gave me a call. I was like, told me congratulations. I didn't know what for, but I guess he caught it before I did. So either way, it was still exciting, and I'm proud to have my name on that record.
It doesn't really surprise me, because I get texts from your dad all the time updating me on how you're doing.
Yeah, he likes to get involved.
Yeah, and I know he's heading down to Rochester on Friday, and I actually wound up talking to him. For anyone who doesn't know, Zach and Josh's dad, Roger, is my realtor. There are a lot of close ties in Peterborough. So I do talk to Roger probably more than I speak to most players' parents, but he mentioned that he wasn't sure about until he checked the schedule if he was going to go Friday, because he didn't want to be traveling while you were playing and miss that game, or vice versa. But with Josh's game on Friday and your game on Saturday, he can check them both out. So he's pretty excited about this weekend.
Yeah, he's pumped up. He's been talking about it for a while and trying to hype us both up. But I'm happy to have the support from him, and I have the support from the rest of my family too. So yeah. Nice to have that.
And obviously, as the season went on, I mean, you're known more for your speed and your ability to push the pace than necessarily the defensive side of the game, which I've noticed over the last few years you worked very hard on. We talked about this earlier in the year, that when you came up to senior lacrosse, the Lakers asked you to focus on that side and then let the transition kind of come naturally. So it must be nice for you to get this cause turnover record, because it's all about defense. It's got really nothing to do with speed. Quickness and awareness, but it's more on the defensive side of the game.
Yeah, definitely. The defensive side of my game will always need improvement no matter what. So being able to work hard at that and have somebody to show for it is really exciting for me, and just shows that I have been working hard at it, and I'm just really happy about that.
You've got some veteran players on that team that can show you a thing or two about defense. I mean, the captain, Dan McCrae, obviously is one of them. Curtis Manning, who is probably one of the more underrated defensive players around the league. And, you know, there's a lot of veteran guys on that club, plus some of the younger guys like Tyson Bell, who are kind of going through the same thing, working on being really consistent defensively. And he's one of the most dynamic players around. Is there anyone in particular that's helped you or really given you some tutelage as you develop in the National Lacrosse League?
I'd say it's been a team effort, for sure. But I mean, I've watched, like, Mike Tarnegie, I think it's worth noting. He's an important part of our defensive group, and he leads by example every day on the floor. And then Greg Harnett, my locker buddy, he's also just the guy who's going to put it on the line every single night. And I mean, I could go through the whole list of all of our defensemen and tell you about how each one of them have impacted the way that I've played. But I think it's just better off to just give credit to the whole group, yeah. And just show how close knit we are on the back end there. And I'm really confident going with this group into playoffs. And I'm excited for what we can do.
And of course, the coaching staff led by Kurt Miloski has worked with you, I'm sure. What was their approach? What did they tell you they wanted out of you this season?
They told me that they wanted to obviously see me in transition as well. But then as the year got underway, the transition game as a whole, like for our team, improved just dramatically from last year. I wasn't part of the team last year, but from guys that I've talked to, they say that it's night and day. But so I think with the help of Mitch Wild and Tyson and all those guys on the back end contributing to the transition game, they wanted me to focus solely on defense, and then just whatever I can contribute elsewhere happens. So after about the first game, that I was basically focusing strictly on defense.
How do you feel about the way your defensive game has come around? Because when I watch you play, I see shades of what you were working on back here in Peterborough. I get to see you play a lot, and I really saw some development. In the National Lacrosse League, everything does seem to be a little quicker. It seems like there are still, I mentioned in my columns that there are the odd time you've looked like a rookie this season, but for the most part, I felt like your defensive game has been pretty good and developing. How are you feeling about where you are?
Yeah, I'm happy to where I've gone at this point, but no means satisfied. I go through and watch the film from the games, and it hurts to watch some of the plays that I'm a part of because I get burned so bad. But I think that's just a testament to how good every single player in this league is. So I think there's some spots I can improve on, especially ball watching. I catch myself doing that just because I want the ball. So if I can limit that aspect of my defensive fault, I guess I would call it, then I think it would help a lot. So just trying to form good habits moving forward.
The other side of the record thing that I've been tracking, it's not, you didn't set a record, and there wasn't, in loose balls, there wasn't much chance just because of the season that Jay Thornburg with 246 back in 2015 broke Jeff Snyder's record. Snyder has the next four, but you did wind up with the 16th most loose balls in history, as it's been tracked. Of course, it basically goes back to about 2005 as the records have been kept, but still 16th most ever with 200. And it's interesting, I don't know if you're aware of this, of the 15 guys ahead of the 15 seasons ahead of you, six are by Jeff Snyder, three are by Jim Veltman, who holds the all-time record. Three are by Brody Merrill, who should pass him next year for the all-time record. And the other three are by face-off guys Jay Thornburg, Jordan McIntosh, and Bob Snyder. So it's pretty good stead for you. And it's one of those things, it's hard to even figure out how some guys are just so good at this. I mean, I think Brody Merrill's a great example, who's a guy who's still doing such a good job. And, I mean, you're coming up with 12 loose balls a game, and it just looks like balls just come to you, but that's clearly not it, because otherwise it wouldn't be the same guys all the time. How do you get those loose balls all the time?
Every time someone asks me about this, I attribute it to hockey.
Yeah.
From growing up playing hockey, the puck's always on the ice, so you're just trying to get the ball going in your direction so that you can have a chance to pick it up. I would attribute it to just my hockey background growing up, and then playing lacrosse in the backyard with my brothers growing up, and just fighting for the ball, just because if you don't have it, you can't do anything. You got to play defense.
As you go into the playoffs, you are looking at a streak. And again, you mentioned yourself, you weren't part of this team last year, but over the last number of years, Calgary has had Colorado's number in the playoffs. And it's, in one way, I guess it's got to be kind of like, kind of comforting thinking, hey, we've got good precedent here. On the other hand, it's completely irrelevant to this year. How do you guys balance that? Do you try and take some confidence from the that streak of like 8 or 9 of the last 9 or 10 postseason games winning for Calgary, or do you just ignore it and focus on what you have to do right now?
I would say that we ignore it and just focus on what's ahead of us. I mean, we've got a different team this year, but they've also got a different team, so you can't really rely on what happened in the past. So if we just focus on playing our game and sticking to our process and playing as a team, that's our best way of approaching this game.
You've been the team, it looks to me like the Roughnecks have gotten better and better as the season's gone on. And I think a huge turning point, because there's so much talent on the club, it wasn't quite clicking early in the year. Christian DelBianco stepped in and, to my mind, became the goaltender of the year with the way he's played. You guys must feel like he just gives you a chance to win every night. Did you feel within the team that there was a turning point when he stepped in?
I don't know if it was solely because of him. No doubt in my mind, he's been a huge part of our team. But I would say that we rallied as a team to get to the point that we're at, and he is definitely a huge part of that. But I wouldn't put it solely on him, just because our offense must have hit 10 posts in the first couple games. So yeah, if we don't hit those 10 posts and all those go in, then we're not 1-3 after game 4. We're 2-2. So I'm not sure what it was. He's definitely a huge part, and he does give us a chance to win every game with the way he's been playing lately. I do think he is the best goaltender in the league, but I would say it was a team effort, just coming together as a whole, and he was a huge part of it.
I thought it was interesting. The game that things really seemed to turn around when he stepped in was in Toronto, and you guys scored a whole bunch of goals. It was 19 or 17. I can't remember how many you had. But I went through and looked at all of those, and it was really a lot of individual efforts on offense. The guys made great plays. I mean, Dane Dolby with some amazing shots, Curtis Dixon doing what he does, all kinds of great plays. But it wasn't the flow of the offense that makes you guys really dangerous. And it seemed to me it was actually the next week. I don't know if that kicked in some confidence, but the offense really seemed to get the ball moving the way that you guys can do. And that, I thought, even more than Christian going in, may have been where things really came together for you.
Yeah, the chemistry on our front end has only been getting better as the year goes on, and especially with guys like Holden Gattoni coming on late, just stinging. Feels like every shot that he takes is fine in the top corner. So just having everyone being able to contribute, and doesn't matter who's scoring goals or who's getting all the points, just as long as we're getting the job done as a whole. And we've definitely been coming together on the front end just as much as we've been coming together on the back end, like we talked about earlier.
And just to wrap up, you've got the game on Saturday night in Denver. Anything in particular that you guys are focusing on as you get ready for the playoffs?
I would say just staying positive and focusing on what we've got to do, and not letting the outside factors influence the way that we're approaching the game, whether it's referees or other players trying to get under our skin. So just staying positive and playing our game, and we should be successful.
Appreciate your time, and congratulations both on the rookie cause turnover record and on the number 16 all-time in loose balls. I think both really remarkable achievements that I don't know what your expectations were going into the season, but I would imagine you've met and exceeded a lot of what you could have hoped for.
Expectations coming in are just to win, so I haven't done that yet. So
okay.
Still some unfinished business to get to take care of.
Thanks for your time, and good luck this weekend.
Thank you very much. Talk to you later.
Now joining me on Box of the Beat, the new single-season assists record holder from the Saskatchewan Rush, Mark Matthews. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So I know it's not a primary concern of yours, setting records. Numbers aren't really the thing except for in the wins column, but it's got to feel pretty nice to get something like that. Know that you've got created more assists than anybody who's ever played in the National Lacrosse League in a season.
I mean, yeah, it's pretty cool. Obviously, to to hold a record like that is pretty significant, I guess. But, you know, like you said, it really doesn't mean anything if we don't come away with a championship here.
Yeah. I almost feel like some of these records mean more to me than they do to some of the players, because I track them. I know people are interested in watching. So, like, for the last 6 or 7 weeks, I've been following yourself and Jake Withers and Zach Currier and Joe Rizzaterrez as you went after these records. And it almost becomes like I'm hyper aware of what's going on, even if you guys are just kind of playing the game. So for me, I was traveling back from Prague when you were playing the game this weekend. I came back on Sunday. So I was trying to keep track of everything while I was over there, and games were on at like 5 in the morning on the time I was. So I was kind of catching up afterwards, and it's just kind of cool to see some of these numbers that the people are putting up. But I mean, in the game, are you even aware of it? Or, I mean, you guys were pretty focused on a tight game there.
Well, I obviously knew from your tweets and everyone else's tweets that I needed 6.
Yeah.
I wasn't really aware too much. Churchy was in my ear the whole game. You know, that you need 2, you need 3, or whatever it was. But I figured it out kind of midway through the third quarter. I'd got an assist somewhere, and I heard the announcer beside Mark Bray, our trainer, say that he needs 2. So at that point, I knew that I needed 2, and then when I passed Benny the ball, or Churchy passed Benny the ball on the power play early in the fourth quarter, yeah, it kind of was like, oh, you need 1 more. And then they announced it and stuff over the loudspeaker and everything. So I had a pretty good idea,
right,
that I just tied it, and that when Daw said had scored that goal, he went and got the ball and stuff. So it was pretty cool.
That is neat. I mean, one of the things that I'm sure you've talked about with everyone who's asked about it is, you in the past couple of years, you've led the team in scoring by like 30 points over the next guys, whether it's Robert Church or Ben McIntosh, or I think I'm trying to think if Curtis Knight was next one time, but whoever the next guy was. This year, it is a bit closer, and partly because, I mean, you've been getting more and more assists this year, largely because, I mean, Robert Church has 47 goals and Ben McIntosh 46, both career highs for them by 10 and 9 goals respectively. And it seems like the offense as a whole is really working well.
Yeah, I mean, for sure. We move the ball a lot, obviously, if you watch our team play. We're not a selfish group by any means. And when that stuff's going on, I mean, you know, everybody's kind of getting points. And, you know, fortunately for me, I do a lot of the ball carrying, I guess. So I kind of get more in that sense. But everybody has, you know, contributed pretty evenly throughout the year. And, you know, our power play was probably first in the league, if I would think. And where we score a lot on the power play. So, you know, those are Robert and Benny's kind of specialties there, Robert, for sure. But, theirs are just tap-in assists for me for those guys shooting the ball. So,
yeah, I talked to Derek Keenan actually when you guys acquired Dan Dawson. We talked about a bunch of things. One of the things I asked him about was the power play and the approach that you guys take, because so many teams, you see the theory of everybody gets a touch, move it around the outside, the perimeter, and then kind of gradually start to work. And you guys seem to attack much more quickly. And he was pointing out, have a go, like get going, do the things that you do well. And the one aspect besides just getting going quickly was if you and trying to score before teams are really set up, I guess, Sunday, is sometimes it gives you a third chance on the power play in the 2 minutes if you get that quick shot on the first possession. So you guys do, you've been very successful generating a lot of chances, but also scoring at a very high clip on the chances you get.
Yeah, I mean, we like to, without obviously giving secrets away and stuff, but we like to play a lot, just, you know, reading off each other. And obviously we got a lot of great minds on the floor, a lot of great minds off the floor, you know, behind the bench. And we're not, like I said, not a selfish group. If somebody sees something, you know, the last game when I tied the record on Benny's goal, him and Churchy had something already drawn up between the two of them. And like the rest of us had no idea. And I came off and was like, did you guys plan that? And they were like, yeah. You know, we just have trust in our group that, you know, if they want to do something like that, they don't need to tell, you know, Bubs or Keenan or myself or anybody. Yeah. It's just, you know, what they see, and then they do what they see, and we feed off of everything like that.
How, I mean, looking at your numbers, you actually scored the second fewest goals of your six seasons with 32, which, again, I'm sure is not that important to you compared to the 14 in the W column, but it's it seems like your role will shift from week to week. And one of the things I said in my column a couple of times was, hey, one reason I thought you might not get the record is because you tend to go off for five or six goals once in a while. And obviously the days you're scoring that many, you're not going to have as many assists. But it seems like it has been a lot more of the righties finishing and you kind of facilitating this year. Has that been by design or is that just kind of how things have worked out?
I mean, it's just kind of how it worked out, I think. I bet you if you looked at my shots as well as shooting percentage was probably the worst I've shot in my career as well. I just wasn't shooting the ball well this year. And, right. You know, when other guys like Robert are shooting at an incredible rate, and obviously Benny shoots at a very steady rate, and Marty and Snyder and all everybody on the offense, Doss and Ryan, Chaps, it just seems like a no-brainer to pass them the ball if they have a better chance of scoring than I do. And obviously this year it's pretty well worked out that way.
So now you guys get a week off to prepare for either Calgary or Colorado, whoever comes out of that. And you get a chance to practice, I guess. Will you guys have a practice this week?
Yeah, we're flying into Saskatchewan on Saturday morning. We're going just going to practice once there in the afternoon and probably have a nice team dinner and watch that game on Saturday night and then coming home Sunday morning.
Nice. And then you get – so now does that – that's interesting, actually, because one of the things that people have talked about, players and coaches and that have talked about over the years with the bye to the division final is, well, the week off is not always really preferred. I mean, it's almost like you'd rather be getting together and continuing to play. But this seems like almost the next best thing, getting to fly in together and have the practice together and watch that game as a group so you have that – that weekly kind of team experience. Is that something you guys have done before or is that a new development?
We've never really done anything like this. The last year that Rochester had won during their little streak there, we'd flown into Calgary and practiced in Calgary. And then we all went to the game, Calgary versus Colorado, I believe, when they beat us in that mini game stuff. And we went and did that. But other than that, we're kind of we take the bye week when we can. But, I mean, our schedule permitted the end of the year. We were like game, bye week, doubleheader, bye week, game, now bye week. Just not very ideal heading into what we're hoping is a long and successful playoff run here.
So, obviously, great to get together and you know, obviously, you guys have a slightly different situation than a lot of teams. I mean, you mentioned a Rochester or most of the teams in the East, Toronto, Rochester, Buffalo, and New England, all practice in Ontario and have most of their guys in Ontario. You guys really have a split between Eastern and Western guys. So it's not like you can all just drive somewhere. Saskatchewan's kind of central for you.
I mean, that's I would have liked it to be out here, obviously, but the West guys are the same way. I mean, it's just – it's nice and easy to get everybody together out there. We'll probably get to use our arena.
Right.
You know, everything's right there for us. Our gear's all there and stuff. So we can get out there and maybe do some stuff in the community as well. And just to see each other, I mean, get a run in and get better again, as we try to do every week, just, you know, a little bit better, as long as you can get a little bit better every week and moving forward, we're looking good.
Everyone does seem to talk about you guys being aware of, you know, last season you're in the championship and didn't like losing in the finals to a very good Georgia team. It was a terrific series. And obviously there's some motivation from that, but I would imagine that's there and you're all aware of it, but you can't be looking at that as the key as you head into this playoffs. I mean, it's a whole new season. It's always different every year. Pretty internal focus.
Oh, for sure. I mean, we haven't been looking at anything all year. I mean, we lost to all those teams on the East there once, probably at least by everybody this year. And, you know, it doesn't really matter to us. You know, you're going to have to see whoever you see and may the best team always win, I guess, right, when you get down to that final game or final series. But, you know, like I said, we're not looking at the East, probably watch any of the East games until it until it's official that we are or we aren't, I guess, in that final that final series. And, you know, hopefully we can, you know, redeem ourselves and get back in the win call.
Appreciate the time. It's always a pleasure to talk, and wish you the best of luck. And hope you have a great weekend heading out and practicing this weekend and with the guys and getting ready.
Thanks, Tamper.
Joining me on Box the Beat, one of the contenders for Rookie of the Year and the new holder for the record of most face-off wins by a rookie is Jake Withers of the Rochester Nighthawks. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So, obviously, I don't know, I guess it's a bit of an anticlimax in terms of this show for your record, because you broke it a couple of weeks ago. We had Mark Matthews setting one on the weekend. Zach Carrera set the cause turnovers record last week, and Joe Resiterich just broke the points by American record. But you've been kind of building on this record, but it's got to feel pretty good. I mean, coming into the season, I think a lot of other people expected you would be the best faceoff guy in the league, and it looked like to me like it took you about 4 weeks before you're really comfortable, and from there you've just looked right at home at the dot.
Like you said there, you know, it took me a little bit to kind of, you know, adjust to the NHL rules of being a little farther back from the ball. But, you know, once I had a few games under my belt, that kind of worked itself out. But, you know, at the same time, I think, you know, the record's nice to have, but at the end of the day, it's just a number. And it's just a testament to, you know, the four guys that Coach Hazen puts on the lines every single faceoff that I got out, there that, you know, battle for all the loose balls, and, you know, whether it's they pick it up or I pick it up, you know, we work together as a group, you know, each and every game. And, you know, I feel like for the most part, over the course of the season, we've just got better and better each game, and it really showed, you know, getting us a berth in the playoffs, which is, you know, what I'm happiest about right now.
Mm-hmm. Now, you didn't obviously play in the National Lacrosse League under the previous rule where you could pull the ball out of your in the back of your stick and go as far as you want, but you've played under that rule in the summers in the CLA, both in junior and in senior, so you are familiar with that rule. How much of an adjustment was that? Because, like you said, everyone else on the ball team is really important when you can't just pull it out all the time to yourself and go. You've got to be getting it to someone. Someone's got to be available either for a pass or for you to pull the ball to.
Yeah, so I was fortunate enough, you know, my first year in college, that rule was still in effect. So I was able to, you know, run around in the back of my stick. But the last 3 years there at Ohio State, you know, they made the rule where you weren't allowed to do that anymore. So
yeah.
I kind of got used to, you know, pulling it to certain areas and, you know, use my wing guys as necessary. So, you know, I had 3 years out under my belt. So even in the summer ball when I was playing with Peterborough and the MSL the last 2 summers, I would never really keep it in the back of my stick. I feel like for every, you know, five or ten face-off wins I'd get, I'd probably do it, you know, one or two times. So, you know, college really helped me kind of adjust to, you know, using, you know, the wing guys or whatever you want to call them in the NHL, the other four guys on the lines there, as, you know, so we're all on the same page, and, you know, it's not just me trying to win it to myself every time. I put them where I want them, and, you know, we communicate all game and make sure that, you know, if they see something that I know what it is, and I can pop into certain areas, which makes their life easier, at the same time makes my life easier.
As you're going through the season and getting more and more comfortable, I guess it's a bit of a chicken and egg thing, but certainly I follow the Rochester fans page on Facebook. It's a private group on Facebook that I was invited to, and it's interesting to see some of them, because I think the Rochester fans are quite knowledgeable, and you can really see them, how much they've appreciated what you've brought to the club with the face-off wins, as well as your defense, nice, solid defender. I know you don't really aim to do anything particularly. You're not trying to do things that stand out. You're just trying to contribute as one of the guys in a very solid defensive system. And it's got to feel nice that you can do that, play your role, and have the fans appreciate it.
Yeah, for sure. You know, like you said, you know, I feel like we have some of the most knowledgeable fans in the league. And, you know, being fortunate enough to live down here for the whole season with, you know, two of my good buddies and getting out of the community, you know, know, each and every week, you know, you run into a lot of fans who, you know, you talk lacrosse with them, and, you know, it's like most of them have, you know, played growing up, and I think that's just a testament to, you know, over the past, you know, 20, 30 years or however long their roster's been, that's a been in the community. It's just, you know, Kurt Stires and, you know, the previous owners have done a great job of getting us out of the community and really building that, you know, lacrosse knowledge within the community. So, you know, it's nice to be able to get out there and talk to people who, you know, share the same love for the game and also the same amount of knowledge for the game. And, you know, like you said, just on my play, I appreciate being able to get our offense the ball and get in possession of the face-off guy. But at the end of the day, I really like to, you know, be a defense guy first. So, you know, I think what makes us such a good defensive unit is that we are a unit. Everyone's always on the same page, and, you know, we trust each other, and, you know, we work just as hard for each and every guy. So, it's been good.
In terms of the defensive group, I mean, you've got Graham Hossack, who to my mind is the top defensive player in the league. I think he's really established himself.
I would agree with you on that.
Yeah, you've also got some guys who maybe don't get as much attention. I mean, Ian Lord, a guy that you play with in the summer, who to me has maybe had the best 2 or 3 years of his career over the last couple of seasons. I think he's just gotten better and better in his late 20s, early 30s. You've got other guys like, you know, Brad Gillies, and just a really, even like Luke Magnan, that, you know, was drafted by Toronto and released and hasn't gotten a lot of attention, but it's just gotten better and better. And it seems like you guys are back to the days of playing the way the unit was when the team was winning championships 3 years in a row.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, we have a good mix of kind of upcoming guys that are young, you know, some youth, and at the same time, we have some, you know, vets that have won 3 championships, you know, Sid Smith, and I think Lordy is there for at least 2, and then Scott Campbell, too. So, you know, we have a good mix, and, you know, guys that are kind of in the limelight, like Graham and Sid was, that, you know, through his prime, and then guys that are just, you know, kind of coming up, like you said, like Brad and Luke. But I think at the same time, you know, everyone's kind of got a chip on their shoulder, and that's what makes us a real good unit that's pretty gritty, and, you know, we'll put our nose to the grindstone and work. And, you know, especially with the best there, guys like me and Brad and Luke can kind of look up to, and even Graham kind of does too at the same time, you know, guys that we can kind of lean on when we kind of have questions about anything. And, you know, there's just a group of older guys that, you know, I wouldn't want to play with anyone else for, you know, my rookie year, and even just moving forward.
Yeah. It's interesting, as you guys go into this playoff run, having had a dry spell, playoff success-wise over the last few years since those championships, but it almost feels to me like when you guys lost 6 straight games earlier in the year, I mean, you come out with a couple of big wins, lose a whole bunch, then you go 8-2 your last 10 games. Now that you've made the play, I mean, it came down to the wire, obviously. You went into the final weekend really needing to win to get into the playoffs. But now that you're in, it almost feels like those losses early in the season can be seen as a good thing, because I think it challenged you. It probably helped put that chip on all of your shoulders and make you realize that you had to work together. You couldn't, after those 2 big wins at the beginning, you couldn't just expect or assume anything. You had to work for everything you've got. And to me, it's been at both ends of the floor, up and down, Matt Vincent, and everybody has just been really focused over these last 10 games.
Yeah, exactly. Coach Adrian always says, you know, the season, even just the game of lacrosse, it's always a roller coaster, you know, a lot of peaks and a lot of valleys. So, you know, we definitely had our valleys with that 6-game losing streak. But, you know, after that, we kind of got back to the basics and, you know, really, really found our identity as a team and really started to mesh together. And, you know, I think the last half of the season, we've been kind of peaking, and, you know, it's at the right moment. And I feel like, you know, we're a much better team now than we were through that 6-game stretch, obviously, but you know, I think it was the best thing that really could have happened to us, especially now that we've clinched the playoff berth and, you know, we're kind of hitting the right stride going into the games that really matter.
When talk of awards comes up, I mean, I know I'm just collecting all the votes for the Inside Lacrosse, the IL Indoor Awards at the end of the season, and something like a Rookie of the Year award tends to be an offensive award. I mean, you see guys, and, you know, like Randy Stotts won it in Graham Hossack's year. Randy Stotts was amazing. He set the record for most points by a rookie and had a fantastic year. I still thought Graham Hossack could have gotten a little more, could have been a bit more competitive for that one, because I thought he was just incredible as a rookie. This year, it's interesting because Zach Kurier's put up some huge numbers, and you've put up numbers that maybe, I think that's part of it, is offensive guys have numbers that are easy to digest. You can say, hey, this guy's got this many goals, he's got this many points. Do you think it makes a difference with yourself and Zach Kurier putting up defensive and face-off numbers that maybe you'll get a bit more of a, people will take a bit more of a look at you as defensive guys than they might normally?
Yeah, I mean, just like you said, I feel like it's a lot easier for offensive guys. You know, you can kind of digest their numbers and say, okay, well, he has this many goals, this many points per game. Where as for SD guys, you know, it's a lot, you know, usually our goals and assists and the points that people want to see, you know, they're not there because they're on the back end. But, you know, with the loose balls, and especially with me with the face-offs, I feel like that kind of helps, you know, whoever votes on the awards. You know, kind of give them something to look at and say, okay, you know, he's made this much of an impact over the course of the year. But, you know, at the end of the day, the numbers are just numbers, and, you know, the only numbers that really matter are the wins and the losses, and, you know, at the end of the year, what seed you are going into the playoffs. So, you know, with that said, you know, awards are nice, and, you know, it would obviously be nice to win something, but, no, I'm hoping that the award we win at the end of the year is, you know, being able to hoist that new trophy that just made up in front of our fans in Rochester.
What do you think of the trophy?
I mean, they call it a cup. I don't think you can drink it, right? So I don't know if it's really a cup. I don't really want to comment much on it, but,
okay.
You know, either way, it'd be nice to lift up over my head.
Yeah.
I guess we could find something to put on top to drink out of it with, but...
Somebody did comment that I think it was Steve Govett, said that it is actually, the top is hollow, that there you can put stuff in it to drink out of. It was a Twitter comment. I'm not 100% sure, but I'm curious to see how big it is. And I think it looks nice. The design is really cool. It would be nice to be able to, you know, put some champagne in there and enjoy the traditional drink. That's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I was wondering too, because it kind of looked like it was a little hollow at the top. So,
yeah,
you know, a lot of people were making a big fuss over that, and a lot of people didn't really understand why it mattered that much. But, you know, I feel like the general consensus for guys that actually play the game is that, you know, you work all season, you know, work all off season to get prepared for the season, and then, you know, you put your blood, sweat, and tears in the 18 games, then potentially another, you know, five in the playoffs to win that thing. And, you know, you dream all your life, and, you know, the first thing that, you know, I always imagine once I win that is having a few drinks out of it with, you know, the guys that I went to battle with for the entire winter. So, you know, I mean, if it's not open at the top, it's not the end of the world, but it would be nice to have a nice, cool beverage out of it.
Yeah. And you guys obviously got to do that last fall, so you are speaking from recent experience.
Yes, exactly. We did a lot more than just drink out of that cup, but some people saw on social media.
Yeah, that was a bit of a, that got some attention that maybe you didn't necessarily want. But, I mean, I feel like that's not the worst thing that has happened to the Man Cup.
Oh, no, trust me. Some of the stories I've heard.
Yeah, yeah. The whole bonfire situation back in the early 2000s was one of the best in terms of a story.
Yeah.
Now, yeah, the last thing I want to mention is talking about the numbers. I just want, for anyone who's thinking about it, I have a vote for Rookie of the Year for the IL Indoor Awards, and I know which way I'm leaning, but I look at anyone who's not sure where they should rank you, just so they can consider it. Your 279 faceoff wins, I don't know if you're aware of this, puts you into a tie for 10th all-time in one season. Nine seasons ahead of you, four are Jeff Snyder, three are Jay Thornburgh, and then one each for Bob Snyder and Peter Jacobs, who actually doesn't appear anywhere else on the list in the top 20 or so. So pretty elite company that you've moved into already.
But you know what the highest single season is?
338.
Oh, that's a lot.
Jay Thornburgh 3 years ago. Just, it was a killer season.
Yeah.
And then after that, it's 319 by Bob Snyder, and then 318, 317, and 310 by Jeff Snyder. So, I mean, there's only six seasons of 300 or more ever. So, you know, you got a ways to go to the top one, but you can you've certainly, you know, obviously starting from scratch again next year, but you'd have some of the very top ones in sight from where you are right now.
Right on.
Yeah. I know you've got practice tonight getting ready for the playoffs, and I know the big number that you want is those four wins that would bring you a National Lacrosse League Cup championship. I appreciate you taking the time to talk, and good luck down the stretch.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Joining me on the Record Breakers edition of Boxel Beat on NLL Radio is Joe Resiteritz, the highest single-season scoring American in National Lacrosse League history. Welcome to the show. That's got to sound pretty nice.
Hey, thanks for having me on, Steven. Yeah, it's still really has to hit me. I mean, with all the great Americans that have played, Casey Powell and Drew Westervelt, I'm always thinking those guys I really never thought about when we were playing with how tight Jeez was this year, but when we got it done, and I couldn't be more happier.
Yeah, I mean, it's something that I've talked to the other three guys already who have broken major records this year. And Mark Matthews, I said, were you aware of the situation? And he said, it was kind of hard not to be with me and other people tweeting it and, people talking about it. And so they were aware, and there were people on their bench that were talking about, the assist record. A little bit of a different situation for him because Saskatchewan had already clinched first overall. They were in a tight game with Calgary, but not the same kind of importance in that game. As for you guys, you're just fighting to get into the playoffs. And I think, as it turns out, the way things worked, you probably would have made it even if you'd lost, but I'm not sure. The chances of you making the playoffs dropped drastically if you'd lost that game. So I'm sure you weren't thinking a whole lot about it.
Yeah. Kind of what Mark said, it's hard not to know about it. Everyone's talking about it. You're getting social media is all over it, but what was at stake within the last couple weeks of the season? You put that stuff behind you, especially with how big of a game Saturday was. It's whatever it took to come out with a victory. That was what was on my mind. And I sure have a bet for anyone else. In my situation on our team that. Wins first. We didn't want to end our season that on Saturday, and we're ready to start a new season and ready to go on a run in the playoffs.
Of course, in terms of this record, you could have taken all the pressure off by just getting more than 2 points the week before. So I don't feel too badly about making sure you were aware that it was happening. But it's certainly built up a bit of drama for everybody.
We had a tough game against New England.
Yeah.
Aaron Bold had a heck of a game. Every game he's played us this year, he's been dynamite. So it wasn't our best effort team wise. We did a lot of good things. We got a ton of shots. It just wasn't our night, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
You're not gonna have your night. In a long season like this, every night's not gonna be your night. How good we were playing at the second half of the season, and we knew that wasn't the way we want to play. We know that wasn't our best, and we know when we're at our best, we're pretty darn good. So we made up for it. We knew last Saturday was a huge game. Buffalo was gonna come out swinging, so which they did. They had a heck of a game as well. It was an entertaining game. I haven't had a game like that in a long time, so it was fun to be a part of.
I've seen several of your games in person this year because I've come down and done sideline reporting for three of your games in Rochester. I've seen you play in Toronto, and it's been interesting to watch the team develop over the course of the season. And I actually thought the game you guys played in Toronto was kind of a microcosm of your entire year, where you came out moving okay. There were some stretches in the first half, though, where it felt like, you know, you weren't getting goals, but the offense was still working pretty well. But when the goals weren't going in, it seemed like it became a bit more individual. You didn't have the same kind of movement to get open and then movement with the ball that you'd had. And then you got back to it, and again, it was a successful kind of immediately. And I guess for people outside watching, it's easy to say, well, why don't you just do it the way that works all the time? But when you're on the floor, there's so much happening so quickly that I guess it's always a challenge. You need those reminders to keep doing things the way that works.
Yeah. How tight the East was this year, and over three or four times a season, so you know, it's pushing the battle against them. You know what they're going to do, they know what we're going to do. And you know, if they didn't, you know, get all season long, it's just how momentum changed so quickly. The way we play, the fast tempo, tight defense is down. You know, and by the end of the game is where we're at our best. You know, second half of the season. With that close game, that games were real big, and we just kept grinding it, you know, and it paid off for us. So we know that going into next week, or this weekend actually, we're going to have to take that up with a big notch. And there is a whole different level of playing that we got to bring our best ability, you know, this weekend.
Yeah, obviously the big challenge, I guess, mentally and on the floor, is that you're 0-3 now against New England this year. They're a team that's kind of had your number. Very close games, so a 9-8 win for them, an 11-9 to win, and then the 11-6 win. So it's not like you guys have been getting blown out or not being able to you know, play defensively, but the offense has had some struggles against them with just 23 goals in the three games. Anything in particular you guys have noticed from watching those games that seems to give you a challenge with them?
From the last two games, or the first two games early in the season, I'd have to go back and see, you know, what we were a different team then. You know, we were trying to figure out who we were, you know, in the first half of the season. You know, we ran an air bowl in all three games, was stellar. They have a very big defense. They're good at getting in lanes. They're fast. They're athletic. And their offense is, you know, got a lot of firepower. So, I mean, we see them, like we see Trout three or four times a year. Mm-hmm. And, you know, drop, you know, three losses to them this year. But it's a new season starting this weekend. So, we're looking forward to get that first win against them this weekend.
Yeah, and I mean, counteracting the 0-3 against them is that you're 8-2 in the last 10 games of the season. Things have been clicking. You've been playing very well up and down the floor. The offense, you guys have been really moving the ball and working collectively. The defense is a unit again, working very successfully as a unit. And, of course, Matt Vince, I think, has wound up having his best season in a few years and really looking very much like the Matt Vince of the championship years. When he was winning, of course, goalie of the year awards all the time.
Yeah, you know, Vito's, he takes us where we got to go. You know, the amount of games he's won for us this year, you know, when he's on, you know, everybody knows that, all right, we got this game. You know, he's been in my opinion, he might be the best goalie, you know, to ever, you know, play. But he comes down to, like, the big game, that big save. You know, one guy was going to do it, that's Vito. And, you know, this season he has been, you know, this is one of the best seasons I've seen a teammate with him. This is definitely one of his best seasons, mm-hmm. you know, because I've been in but with Vito playing that good, with our defense being,
being big and athletic, having the guy like Jake Willard on the draw. You know, we scored, our team scores, we're getting the ball right back. And,
yeah.
You know, he's probably, he's the guy that would be a team MVP would be Jake Willard. You know, what he does for this, for our team is amazing. So, I know he broke a face-off record as a rookie, and, you know, he's got more records to break. Goes on.
It's interesting, you look at your team, and we're doing our Inside IL Indoor voting for all the year-end awards, and obviously Jake is and Austin Shanks and Eric Fennell, for the matter, contenders for the Rookie of the Year award. You're in there for Offensive Player of the Year and Vino among the goalies, but you look at the MVP award, and honestly, I know Matt Vince was named the team MVP, and you just pump Jake Withers tires, which I think is completely appropriate. I know a lot of people would look at you with 100 points. But to me, I actually look and say, boy, Graham Hossack is a pretty big deal for this team too. And league-wide, he's one of the most important players, I think, to a team. So you've got four guys who are really, really key players. And obviously more. I mean, you can go up and down the roster, Scott Campbell and Ian Lord, I think. Cody Jamison with his bounce back. Kyle Jackson. So many guys. Corey Vittorelli. So many guys. But Hossack is another one to me that stands out.
Yeah. What Graham does, I've never seen a defenseman like him in the game of lacrosse. All aspects of the game, for defensemen. Even going, the thing I hate is going against him in practice because, it's not fun going against him because he just covers so much space and how big he is and how athletic and how strong he is. It's intimidating to go against. But what he does, whether he's getting 10 to 15 loose balls a game, shut down an offensive player or scored a goal in transition, he's been a freak of nature. Since he's came in this league, that's just going to keep getting better as you get older.
I want to talk a little bit about the other Americans that you've kind of picked off as you've gone through the season, because you mentioned some of the great Americans that have played in this league, and the league started with American players and then gradually brought in Canadians. And obviously the majority of players now are Canadian, but there are some great American players, but it's so important for the league to develop the American players, to give them chances. And I think guys like yourself and Tom Schreiber are great examples for players of what can be done. Schreiber is kind of an anomaly because he just stepped into the league and was incredible, but he's a very different kind of player. He's got a skill set that not many people have. You went through the, playing in the, being near Canada, you played in junior in Canada and you've played MSL. So you've really had more of an immersion in box lacrosse. So I'm sure you've been aware of, guys like Kevin Finner and Brian Langtry, who had 79 points apiece to hold the, to sit just behind Jake Berge's 86 that he set in 2001. Casey Powell tied that. And then, of course, Schreiber last year setting it. So there's five big names of American players that I'm sure you're well aware of the contributions of all of those guys.
Yeah. With me playing, I take it a different route than those guys. I had the luxury of living so close to the border that I could come up here and, play and get better as a lacrosse player. I think my parents are, taking the time to, all over the year, endless weekends where we're just driving up and, for me to get better, me and my brother to get better at lacrosse. So, knowing some of the guys, the big names, I was aware of guys like growing up, going to the game as a kid. As a kid, you know Casey Powell. He was the idol for all kids in the United States for years, including one of my idols. But how he just, went from field to box, just completely dominant. He was the first big, name, all kids want to get into box across, to Casey Powell. And now you got Tom Schreiber in the game. In his first year had 94 points. That's unheard of. His first year ever playing in the game of playing indoor. job, and you just clearly just dominate the game like that. You know, it's the reason why he's the best player in the world. He is for a reason. How he can just dominate the whole game. Watching him, how his style of play is just so different from, other players, it's so hard to stop. And, it's fun to watch, but, at the same time, you're playing against him. It's kind of hard to watch when he's doing it against him.
That's where it's nice to know you've got Graham Hossack that you can put out on him.
Yeah, I have a Graham. Graham's the guy we're going to go out there and put on the best defense, our best offensive guy. Tommy, what he's done is hats off to him. He had an injury here and came back and, he still lit it up when he came back, and that showed you just how great of a player he really is.
Well, I know you're on your way to practice, and you've got a lot of prep to do for this weekend, a big game. Appreciate you taking the time to chat, and certainly wish you congratulations on this record, and good luck as you head into the playoffs.
All right, thank you, Stanford.
There you have it, Lacrosse Friends. Four men setting single-season National Lacrosse League records. Zach Currier with the most caused turnovers ever by a rookie. Also, one of the great loose ball seasons that has been recorded. Then Mark Matthews, the new assists record holder with 84, edging out Sean Evans, Josh Sanderson, and Callum Crawford. Followed by Jake Withers, another great rookie in the league this year, who won more faceoffs than any rookie ever has, and pushed into the top 10 in that category all time as well. And finally, Joe Resiteritz, the highest scoring American for a single season in the history of the National Lacrosse League, passing some all-time greats that we talked about in that in the interview. Kevin Finner and Jake Berge, Casey Powell and Brian Langtree, and of course Tom Schreiber from last year. So the Record Breakers edition of Box the Beat on NLL Radio. You can always get it on iTunes via Inside Lacrosse Podcast as well. The regular season is done. We'll keep on rolling through the playoffs and through the National Lacrosse League Cup, the newly named championship, the finals series. Very exciting times coming. We've got some hot teams. Saskatchewan is obviously a terrific team. Colorado and Calgary, both very solid clubs out west as well, who will be pushing to try and get through the rush into the championship in the east. New England can beat anybody on any given day. You just don't know what that club can do. And of course, Rochester, 8-2 down the stretch. Georgia, 6 straight wins to finish off the season. Two very hot clubs in the east as well. Can't wait for the playoffs. Thank you so much to all four of my guests and to you, Lacrosse Friends, for being with me. Stephen Stamp, your host and editor at ilindoor.com, here on Boxlebeat on NLL Radio. We'll see you next week.